If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
I'm Anthony Padilla, and today I'm sitting down with George Primavera, the legendary game master. He's known for hosting tabletop RPGs, including We're All Gonna Die, which is a live show that is going on right now. And in this episode, we're gonna explore how he got so good at doing what he does, how this role-playing element has allowed people, including himself, to explore parts of themselves that might be suppressed. And the thing that I'm most nervous about is George is going to help me craft a character so that I could play for the first time a character in an upcoming episode of We're All Gonna Die. Let's get into it. George Primavera.
Anthony, thank you for having me.
Thank you. I have been so excited for this episode. I've been so excited for you to come on the show for so long because I am fascinated by you, but what you do is crazy. I believe it was last year you first appeared in a Smosh Games video with Dread. It was Smosh versus Zombies.
Smosh versus Zombies was the first one.
Can you explain how that came to be?
Yeah. So back when Sword AF was going down, my buddy Nick Williams and I came in to just play some D&D with the cast.
That's right.
We just played some practice sessions and got comfortable with the system a little bit.
Yeah.
Then after Sword AF Season 2, I was talking about other alternative TTRPGs with Spencer, just kicking around ideas of have you guys tried something with maybe a little less prep attached to it, like Dread? And Spencer had apparently already looked into Dread and was we were curious about it. Would you want to come in and do a one-day shoot to just experiment with it and see if it works? And I had never played a TTRPG besides those practice sessions with Smosh, so I was nervous as all get out.
Yeah.
But it was quickly so much fun, and I could tell when I came in to play Dread, people were okay, we don't know, we're feeling a little uncomfortable, we don't know what this is, and I think you guys had also just finished a mondo bunch of shooting, so people were apprehensive, and then we got into the game, and within 30 minutes, everybody's clicking in and locking in, and by the third episode of that, we're all belly laughing at every other line, and it just magic is yeah. Kind of what it is. You guys have such an amazing propensity for shared imagination and supporting each other in narratives that it's a no-brainer to play TTRPGs with you guys.
Yeah, and after those shoots, it was all anyone could talk about. How much fun it was to be so fully immersed in a world where I felt like there was no wrong answer.
Yeah, it is energizing and then exhausting and then energizing again when you think back on
it. I want to make this as simple as possible for people that are not familiar with TTRPGs at all. Like those five letters.
Tabletop role-playing games.
There we go. Yeah.
I held up five fingers.
Tabletop
role-playing games. Oh, it's four words. I tabletopped. I tabletopped it. That's what it was, too.
There are varying levels and degrees of how like gamey it is versus how role-play-y it is. Mm-hmm. There's the D&D aspect, which is a little bit more like with the numbers and like you have to roll for a lot of different things.
Character
like that.
Sheet in front of you.
Yeah,
and it's like dice.
It feels a little bit more strict in the way that it's being played.
Yeah.
There's more rules.
More numbers, more rules. They call that crunch in TTRPG. If it's a crunchy game, there's a lot to sink your teeth into and like there's a lot of numbers to get through. It's a crunchy game.
And then what do they call the type of game? Like Dread. So Dread is basically
less crunchy.
So it's less crunchy. The less
smooth
crunchy
peanut butter. Yeah.
I do prefer a crunchy peanut butter though.
I've come around to crunchier peanut
butter. But I think in terms of TTRPGs, I'm preferring a smooth peanut butter.
Oh, yeah. A Skippy, if you will.
I'm a little Skippy. Yeah. A little Jiffy,
a little Skippy.
I mean, you do it better than I do. Can you explain the gimmick of Dread?
It's a Jenga tower in the middle of a bunch of players. There's no character sheets necessarily. You can write stuff down and take notes. Mm-hmm. A thing that is like really promoted in the book that teaches you how to play Dread is to draw connections between players and keep track of those so you know your relationship to the other people you're playing with. Mm-hmm. But Dread is a much simpler TTRPG, tabletop role-playing game. D&D has lots of rules to know. Dread has about three or four.
Yeah. What are those?
The rules are, if you knock the tower over by accident, you die. Your mm-hmm. character dies. If you choose, you don't have to pull a block. You can just like choose to fail a prompt or fail an action, which keeps your character alive, but imposes either a consequence that you have to deal with later or that your party has to deal with. If I ask you to pull a block to survive or something like that and you pull successfully, you avoid the danger, you complete some kind of dangerous task you were trying to do successfully, the story moves forward in a more positive direction, or we at least stave off the negative. And then the big mechanic, which is if you knock the tower over on purpose, declaring it a heroic sacrifice, you can do one spectacular success that ultimately ends your character but pushes the rest of your party forward, gives you a shining moment.
Yeah, and the cool part is like depending on the character's choices in the moment, you get to decide how, you know, based on how risky that behavior is, like if there is a monster chasing this group and this person makes the choice to take off their glove and throw it at the monster and they're like, I'm hoping the monster chokes on this thing and we survive. You're like, that is nearly an impossible task. You're gonna have to pull six blocks in 60 seconds.
Oh, we instituted a time limit. That is something new to the game that we
included.
Oh, really?
There wasn't a time limit before?
No, the game doesn't, because the game really wants you to sit there in that tension for as long as you can.
Oh.
So when John Madison and I adopted Dread for like a live performance, we added a couple of things in. We added like, for example, multiple timed pulls, like doing 30 seconds or 60 second time limits was something we came up with to keep the energy moving in that room.
I think that's so important too, because as a viewer, you're like, I mean, like especially in the live shows that you've been doing recently,
the
audience is counting down for the final 10 seconds.
It's
and the tension
wild.
Is so high. And there's these close-ups of the players, you know,
shaking like leaves.
They want to survive.
Seasoned
they
performers
do,
shaking on stage.
Yes. And this is the thing that they're most nervous about. They're playing these characters, there's so much pressure on them, or at least I would feel like there would be pressure on me, and we'll get into why I haven't done this yet.
I'll tell you what, but like something that's like a big gift that with Dread is that the source of tension becomes the tower, and the role play becomes the easy part.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I have no risk here to fuck up anything until I get up and have to pull from that tower.
Yeah, because like as a viewer, I feel like I'm constantly like, okay, could I do this? And especially because I have the opportunity to maybe do this in the future. The way you're looking at me tells me you want me to be part of this.
Oh, I don't know. I think we might have to get you in there.
I have so much anxiety about playing characters.
Yeah.
I mean, like viewers of Smosh will probably notice in the past year, I've kind of pulled back from being on camera and playing characters as much. I want to focus on what I do best and kind of a little bit more of my safe space. I get to be behind camera. I get to make choices where I do not have that pressure. But watching this, it is so fun. And the questions that I am constantly having is like, how much of this is scripted? How much of is planned? How much of this do they know? Because there are some moments that are so good.
Unscripted. Those moments that are so perfect, yeah.
We went to dinner after this live show, and I was like, that moment with Ian and Tommy, like Ian's playing the scientist character, Tommy's playing this weird cyborg character that Ian's character brought back from the dead, and they have like, and like put him in a robot's body.
Nailed it. That's exactly it. That's correct.
It's crazy, but there was this moment where, you know, because it's funny, scary, 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 tension. And then all of a sudden, there's this moment where there's this heart-to-heart between these two characters. And as a viewer, I'm like, oh, this was planned from the beginning, and they've been trying to figure out how to get to this point in the story. And when we sat down at dinner, I was like, how much of that was scripted? And you were like,
0% of that. That's all Tommy
That's
and
crazy.
Ian. Yeah.
So how do you, I mean, because like obviously they're great performers, but I have not seen them make choices like that.
There is something magic that happens when like funny people play D&D or performers of any kind. And especially like comedians, like I've played D&D or Dread for like TTRPGs in general for over a decade. And I like to say that like the fun of D&D is the rootin' tootin' shootin', like I'm getting these goblins, I'm getting their gold, and I fought a dragon and all that stuff, and that makes you want to play again. But the thing that makes you a D&D or TTRPG fan for life is when you experience your first accidental genuine moment, I think, where you like didn't expect to have this moment with your friends where like your characters are actually connecting and slowing down.
Yeah.
And you know, just after years and years of hooking scores of folks into TTRPG, those are the moments that I know we're gonna get people. And there are also moments that I know I can't push for that hard. If I push and force, the moment's not genuine. I'm forcing people into a role play that maybe they're not even comfortable with. I would say the thing that I try to do the most is, and this is kind of DMs everywhere, you're reading energy as best you can in the room to try to understand what the players want to do.
So you have to be a very empathetic person.
I definitely would classify myself as having higher empathy, feel like in terms of like secondhand embarrassment, for example. Like I experience very high second. I couldn't watch The Office because Michael Scott's character was so horrible.
You would love watching all of Old Smush.
I wouldn't feel anything. I bet I would. I bet I'd love it.
You would have tears of embarrassment in your eyes.
Okay.
For us. Yes, yes.
But you know, I think just when I see somebody getting close to that moment, I just want to like hold space for that. I just want to be as genuinely reflecting back what they're feeling in the moment. One thing that
running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos, ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
I'm thinking of specifically not only the Tommy and Ian moment. I honestly give them a little more credit for that. They read each other's energy on that and built that through the show by themselves. But I'm thinking of Danny Jollis came on and did one of our We're All Gonna Die shows as he's realizing that Angela Giratana, who is playing his brother in that moment, is dying.
Yeah.
And he's holding her in his arms on stage. And he turns to me and is like, what do you want to do? I'm not looking with like a big goofy grin on my face like, that was crazy. I'm like holding a stone face and waiting to see like what Danny
I noticed that
feeling.
In that moment. I feel like As a performer, sometimes it's a little bit scary to make a big, big choice,
yeah.
especially in a comedy setting like that.
Of course.
And I did see him look at you like,
is this okay that I go genuine here?
Yeah, where are we going with this? And you just sat there and you're like, you let him decide.
Yeah.
And there was that moment, there was that space that I feel like it was interesting. There was like more tension that was built, and then it made the genuine moment feel even more heavy.
I think like comedy sketch and improv sometimes doesn't allow for that because the pacing is so specific. If you mess up the pacing in an improv scene, people will think you don't know what to do. And if you mess up the sketch, they'll think you forgot a line.
Mm-hmm.
And in D&D, because you're playing a character and it's very meta in that we know Anthony is on stage playing a character named whatever, like they're still watching you process what this character is going through. So that space is just like more allowed almost, I think, in this very new burgeoning genre of entertainment. It's only been like 8 years of like popularized D&D content online, maybe 10. So yeah, this is very much like a genre that's still figuring its place out. There's drama, there's comedy, there's very hard niches of both.
Yeah.
There's definitely like performers that only do comedy and performers that only do drama.
Yeah.
But I love playing in that space that's maybe a little bit more geared towards comedy, but only because that makes those dramatic moments hit like 100 times harder.
Yeah, and it's very cool to watch this too in this time period, because I feel like, yeah, maybe 10, 20 years down the line, people kind of know what the best choices are. But I feel like at this point, no one knows,
very experimental.
And it's very experimental, and in many ways what you're doing is helping to define a lot of this, which is really cool to see.
I hope so. I mean, I'm learning from a lot of brilliant creators that came before me, for sure. So
yeah. You know, they set that foundation, and now we're in this period of refining what that is and kind of getting the most out of it. So I do want to know how much of it is planned, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would say, like, for the live shows, much more is planned, just for the sake of hitting, like, these. We're working with incredible tech teams to, like, really put on a show for
and
the audience.
And it's 2 hours. Like, you want 2 hours of solid content.
Solid content. We want it to be really special and cultivated. Like, we have music and sound effects that we design ahead of time. I design it with Tim from Smosh, who is such an incredible technical director. Also have like the amazing lighting team at Dax's Dynasty
lighting,
Typewriter.
Sound and
Dax's lighting is amazing.
And there is some improvisation in terms of the way that
they
those
have
teams
to improv based on what's happening.
Do you feel a lot of pressure in those moments? Because you make it seem so natural.
I black out. I go dead shark eyes, and I absolutely
That's crazy.
Feel nothing. I am nervous for days and days and days leading up to it. But then when I realized I'm like 10 minutes before showtime, I've run through the show 150 times in my head. And then I have to like take into account, like, it's not going to go like that. The players are going to make a choice I didn't expect. I can't pre-plan too much, because if I'm really angling for like events to happen, then the players aren't making choices. I can plan settings. I can plan locations. One really, like, this is like a very much showing how to pull the rabbit out of the hat with like a DM trick, but like it's a very common thing to have a location planned in your head and then have a player make a choice that won't get them to that location based on how you picture things. And then you just sort of reorder the geography of the imaginary world. And you're like, well, now that tunnel leads to the place I wanted to go.
Oh.
And you know, you can just do little swippy swaps. And as long as you are comfortable, like, you know, working with the tech team.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't want that to be the case. Like, I don't want to use that subterfuge. So I'll have the tech people spend 2 hours with me planning 3 different locations that I'm like, we're not going to use 2 of these. Sorry.
So that, like,
that's a big DM thing. Never get precious.
Do you have any examples of planning 3 things and only using 1?
There was I can actually go back to that summer camp episode of We're All Gonna Die. Jack Quaid, Nick Williams, Danny Jolas, and Angela Giratana as the players.
Yeah.
John Madison as an NPC and Spencer Agnew as well as an NPC.
Yeah.
One of the big things there that we really couldn't plan for was we had a poll go out to the audience to vote on where this camp counselor played by John put his keys.
Uh-huh.
Which
it was so weird in the moment. I was like,
why
in
is
his
that a
pants
question?
Pocket or his breast pocket?
Who's putting keys in their shirt pocket?
Yeah, why?
I get it. I heard that criticism.
I'm like, it wasn't a criticism. I was like, this is going somewhere, but where is it going?
Yeah. And through the course of that, very soon we found that character, and this was sort of pre-planned. That character got sacrificed to a giant crab monster and got, you know, sorry, this is gross, so be warned, got cut in half, and then got his top half puppeted like a little man puppet.
What's gross about that?
What's gross about that? Stop it.
You're gross.
The whole thing was, like, the audience had to vote where those keys were for the bus that they came in on,
mm-hmm.
so that they could escape and outpace this creature. So I couldn't plan for, like, we're going to either go down by the riverside or we're going to try to confront the monster and do, like, a full-on combat moment here.
Yes.
So I had to wait till about 10 minutes before till I even knew what was going to happen. And then we had to throw out the other option, the other, like, you know, the secondary possibility there.
Uh-huh.
We were just like, well, we're not going to have that combat moment. We had cues prepped for it. And we just didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You said that you're like anxious leading up to it. But when you're out there, you seem so confident. Earlier, you had also mentioned to me that it feels like you almost become someone that is not George.
That's very, yeah, that's a weird thing. I think I may be unique in that. I feel like when I go on stage, I like dissociate from all of my current problems and worries, right?
Yeah.
I'm not like a different person, but like I just like all my problems and everything that I'm dealing with like goes on hold for a minute.
Yeah.
And that's where all my anxieties come from, is everything that's going on in my life.
Sure,
right?
Sure. Yeah.
So once I hit that little snap, it's like I can be on stage without judgment for myself, so I don't feel anxious anymore.
Mm.
Because it's such an improvised thing, if something does go wrong, we're all improvisers up there. We're all gonna make a goof out of it, and it's okay. And sometimes the things that go wrong are the most memorable good moments. I know, of course, I bring things from like my past experience into my DMing, especially from like the content that I consume, of course. But there is something about like, and this is goes for acting as well, when you're playing a real, just a full-on character, there's like a separation there that if you can tap into it, like a lot of the stage nerves just go away. And
yeah,
that's how I feel like DMing not on stage too. For a lot of my pre-DMing, pre-on-camera DMing career, I was just doing private games and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you meet a lot of new people that way. And it can be very scary to play with five people you've never met before, who, especially if they're paying you for a service to be their dungeon master,
yeah,
like they expect a certain quality and a certain amount of enthusiasm, and that can get, you can get really in your head about like, oh, I gotta make this the experience that matches for them.
Yeah.
But that gets in, as my experience, when I feel that way, that gets in the way of me actually being able to do that. And sometimes the job of GMing is balancing the moments of, oh, that didn't go the way I planned. What am I gonna do?
Yeah, you can't get flustered.
You can't get flustered. You just have to be like, well, I don't know what to do. Maybe they're going to give me an idea. And then I just wait for the player to give me an idea. And then I take the idea and I find a way to cram that into the next cue that I have to hit.
Yeah.
Or, you know, when you're playing like a tabletop game that maybe even if it's for camera, but without an audience and stuff like that, and you can stop down and recolor stuff.
Sure.
You can be a lot more flexible where you can really throw away your plans.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in that stage environment and there's a crew of 10 people that are kind of on that improv track with you and you can't communicate.
And 200 people in the audience sitting there waiting.
200 people and thousands of people at home.
Yep.
Watching live. Yeah, it really helps to just roll with it and wait for the opportunity to jump back on the plan.
Do you remember your first time?
Oh,
being
man, do I remember my first
being
time.
Being a dungeon master, game master.
Yeah, I do. It was in college. My friend Nick and I were listening to a podcast. Nick Williams, who, if you've seen on Smosh Versus, he played not Santa.
Yeah.
Pop on the Smosh Versus Christmas. We were really wanting to get into D&D, and we played a game of Flip Cup that I lost so that I had to go buy all the books and teach everybody how to play because it was like $90 to buy the books.
So because you lost.
So I lost, so I had to DM, because we all wanted to play.
We could even say that you might have this career because you lost Flip Cup.
I literally lost a game of Flip Cup, and if I hadn't, I would not be doing this job.
That's insane. That's insane.
Yeah, that's the butterfly. That's a crazy butterfly effect.
Okay, so moral of the story, lose Flip Cup.
Lose that Flip Cup game, baby. Good stuff comes.
Mm-hmm.
We got around the table and just like made some characters. Immediately, we were using all this unofficial content that people put online, just like right off the bat. The first roll of the game, I had like my bartender came up and be like, you drunk idiots ruined my bar. You owe me a quest.
Uh-huh.
And the first thing that happens is my buddy Nick rolls a dice to punch that bartender in the face and rolls a natural 20. And all of a sudden, we are hiding a body from the town guard. Like, just right out the gate, I threw away. It was like the perfect baptism of like, you can't plan for anything in this game because the players have just as much of a say as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, I love this game. Like, right away.
And immediately
like,
you were
hooked.
You were hooked.
Hooked.
I'm interested if there were any moments where you kind of realized, like, this is more than just a fun little hobby.
Yeah. I mean, so we, as a fun little hobby, started making this podcast called Hero Club, my buddy Nick and I. And during one of the campaigns that we ended, we got to the last episode, the last session, and one of the main player characters had died. or was dying.
Yeah.
And I look around the room and everyone's crying. And it's midnight in a laundry room because it was the quietest place in this house to record.
Uh-huh.
And we're all, you know, a whiskey deep and like looking at each other and like realizing we've been playing together for 4 months of these characters that we'd come to love.
Mm.
And we were losing one. And we were also leaving this campaign. And everybody, you know, we're all crying. Everybody gives a big hug at the end. We all leave. Nick and I, who are living together at the time, are left alone. And we just sat there like, what the f*** was that? Like, how can I feel this much for such a goofy project we're working on?
Mm-hmm.
There is something kind of unreplicatable about a team of people around a table with a shared imagination.
Yeah.
Who are all seeing the same thing because, like, they really sync up in a way, get to a satisfying emotional conclusion together. It's, like, I don't know any other art form that does that.
It's very vulnerable.
Very vulnerable, but it doesn't have to be,
mm-hmm.
which is why I think it's such an accessible hobby to get into. You can just be the goofy goobers around the table and, you know, collecting loot and powering up your character. But then there's, like, I think theater kids should all play D&D. And play with each other and act and do session zeros where you are clear about boundaries and stuff. And, like, that's always a really healthy thing to do so there's no, like, weird bleed between character and person.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it is such a fun game to experiment with. Very common through line. People will experiment with, like, sexual orientations that they're curious about. But just, like, living a character's life who has that orientation.
Mm.
And that can just be a way to be like, does it feel good to inhabit a character that identifies like this? Oh, maybe I would identify like that. Like, that's a very common story. When I'm a DM, you're also all the antagonists in the story, right? So my goal as an antagonist is not to, I'm not trying to critique their point of view.
Right.
I want to understand their point of view and get them to, like, flesh it out more.
That would suck if you were like, that's stupid.
That's dumb and you're dead. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Fireball. You know that. Classic horrible horror story is like a DM trying to exert too much character over a player.
Uh-huh.
It's no fun.
Yeah, on our Reddit, so actually on the same set, there was someone.
I've heard it all.
Did you?
I was there for that episode. It was me.
Were you in the episode where the
wild
choice, the dungeon master constantly was making the bird attack?
The bird hates you. It hates you. Sorry. Pretty funny thing to say as a DM. But it is, that sort of stuff is the sillier side of things.
Right.
I think that the serious, heartfelt stuff can't really exist without the silly unless you really have a bunch of people buying in for something very specific.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think maintaining a safe space around a table is better in every way for a narrative because you have players that are buying in rather than resisting.
And it encourages them to take bigger risks.
Exactly.
Right.
And setting up an antagonist for them to knock down
mm-hmm.
is so much more fun than setting up an antagonist to, like, try to change the player.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Let the player tell their story. They're writing a story over there. You're just supporting as a DM.
Yeah, and that's what it feels like. It feels like you let the characters guide the story and write the story.
Yeah.
And like you said, you just have the foundational things in place, which is like the time period, the location.
An event that is happening in like an overarching capacity.
Yeah. And then maybe that main enemy that they're all kind of going up against.
But they're on a redemption quest. I'm not on a redemption quest. I'm just there to give them some things to redeem themselves with because I'm listening to them want to be on a redemption quest.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I'm imagining if you were trying to make yourself look cool the whole time.
Oh, my God. It's a thing. There's a very common thing where DMs have, like, an insert, which is, like, they have a character that they play even though they're the DM, which can be fine, but oftentimes the pitfall of that is, like, they're doing all the cool shit. And then your players are like, well, good thing the hero of the Nine Sons showed up and we didn't have to do anything in this combat.
Like,
he just didn't play the game, kind of.
Yeah, and that's cool, is that you see people taking these big risks that will have huge impacts on the story and huge impacts on their characters and the dynamics of everyone.
Talk to me. Talk to me.
Okay, George, I'll get real with you. I am... So that night when we all got dinner after the live show, you were like, we got to get you in there.
We're getting real now.
We got to get you to play a character. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm very, very anxious about pre-planning this kind of stuff. Like, about improvising with all these very, very talented people. Because, like, you know, I have been on camera for 20 years and I've been playing characters, but a lot of it's been pre-written, and I feel like I'm not the strongest in my improv skills and character building and all that stuff. But after I expressed that to you, you're like, oh, I handle the hard stuff. We just come up with the character together. We just, you know, like, you'll work with me to create a character, and then everything else kind of just falls
into
place.
It'll fall right into place. That's what I said.
And I am interested in it, but also extremely nervous.
Okay.
So, you know, I feel like that's actually one thing that the audience, too, as like a viewer, you're like...
Easy to say all this, but I'm still feeling anxiety about it.
And as a viewer, you're also like, I could probably do that. But then when you really think about it, you're like, I don't know.
The reality is scary. Yeah.
So I think it could be, and I think that the audience would also enjoy this as well, especially for anyone who does watch these and kind of wonders, could I do this? I don't know. I would love to, but I'm too nervous. I am interested in potentially being in that episode.
Uh-huh.
If you feel like you could confidently get me to a place where...
Can I just ask you a few questions that I might ask a player? And
okay.
You kind of get a vibe for like the creation process
a little bit? Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
So let's do it for Mall Meadows, because that is the location that We're All Gonna Die takes place in, right? So Mall Meadows, it's a fictional peninsula off the coast of Maine.
Mm-hmm.
The main body of the U.S. is like right here. The peninsula is here. And then right in the middle here is the Mall Meadows Sound.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there's like all sorts of f***ed up stuff that's happening in there. There's like this nasty black water that is spilling out over the rest of the landscape, making all the trees all creepy. That's like the very horror adjacent setting that we're playing.
And are all these seven episodes directly linked, or are they?
So they're sort of like loosely linked. Some of them do directly lead into each other, but you can watch any of them without any context and understand the main premise of what's going on.
Yeah, because they're all in the same world, but
All the same world, and they definitely do link into each other. As people who have seen the October show will realize, we're referencing a lot of stuff that happens in previous sessions as, like, history, but, like, that's not what the crux of that story is about,
mm-hmm.
right? So, for your character that we're creating here...
That
you totally will play.
Mm-hmm.
We'd probably be putting you in towards the end of the run of these shows, so there will be quite a bit that's happened.
Yeah.
Let's ask a question of you first.
Okay.
Would you rather know a lot about the setting as a character, or would you rather like the pressure taken off of you and not know a lot about the setting?
I think I'd rather know less.
You'd rather know less?
Because I think that the more...
So you can discover.
Yeah, the more that I know, the more that I have room to get nervous.
Okay, great.
So,
that's perfect. So I think a really clear direction then, if you don't know a lot, is to want to know a lot. Right? So let's pick an angle for you to come in on why you might want to learn more about this place. Can I throw you a couple possible?
Yeah.
And if you feel inspired by something
and
want to go off of these options, throw it out.
Yeah.
Something might be cool, maybe like a marine biologist, because we're dealing with so many crustacean-esque creatures.
Okay.
History or some kind of like occult studies, because there's definitely like some cult actions going on here. We've met the Order of the Spiral a few times.
What period is this?
This would be modern day.
Okay.
But yeah, probably like, you know, normal technology exists and all that, like 2025-ish.
Okay, maybe what if I'm like a character that has some kind of like blog or something that I'm writing where like I'm like doing my own personal investigation on this place. Like I think I'm a real journalist or something, but clearly
so
I have
no
experience.
And I'm like, are you kind of like...
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify has got you covered for selling. But when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process. From syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns, automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
If you're on your own, is it because you're not competent or is it because people think you're crazy? Because you believe something that...
I think people think I'm crazy and I'm trying to prove that I'm not.
So Bigfooty kind of vibes.
Yeah. Maybe conspiracy theorist, but like I've seen something.
Witnessed something or heard something?
Or like I have a family member who told me something before they died. Maybe, and it's like, there's almost like the legend of something, and like, I believe my dad or my mom or someone close to me, a close relative, who had experienced this, but maybe
no one believes. My mind is racing right now. Oh my God.
Maybe no one believes the story, but I believe them because like, I saw in their eyes how real it was.
Yeah.
You know, like, just pulling from personal things that interest me, like people will tell stories of like, oh, there was a Bigfoot my ancestor, my grandfather saw Bigfoot, man. He saw him. And I think that's so interesting because a part of me like wants to believe.
You're a blogger and you're believing something. Would you maybe have interviewed a survivor from a previous session?
Oh, from like a previous episode?
From a previous episode.
Oh, and
they would have maybe told you what they witnessed there. And then you would be curious about learning more.
Because some of the episodes were taken in previous time frames, right?
Yep.
So maybe one of those...
They would have all come before this episode.
Okay, yeah. So maybe I spoke with one of them directly.
Yeah. Which is something we can decide later, like who specifically your connection is.
Okay.
But that's a great in to then travel to this place to learn more about something.
Yeah, and I think it's there should be a lot of stakes. Like I sold my car.
Are you talking about? You're nervous. You're already coming up with stakes? Yes. This is excellent. That's excellent. You know, this is the thing with actors, comedians. They're always like, I don't know what to do with a TTRPG. And then they come out with like, yeah, that's the most brilliant thing to jump to next is the stakes of the character.
Yeah, like I sold everything I own or something because I believe in this story so much.
Incredible.
Okay.
Incredible. Okay, so this is like how you're going to make your name.
Yes, okay. Yes. And it's even beyond making a name as much as like, if this fails, I need to give up everything.
So you have nothing to lose. Or very little to lose.
Yeah, like I've given everything up, so I have nothing to lose.
Okay.
Yeah.
God damn, dude. I don't know how that's not like a fully fledged character already. You gotta slap a name on that. We gotta fill in a few more details that I think we should maybe do off camera.
Yeah.
To keep it a surprise.
You were saying
he's gonna do this show. What are we talking about? Oh my God, you're gonna do it.
You were saying that it's best to work with the other characters so that I have kind of a relationship in some sense. Like I'm on my own, but like maybe there's...
Maybe a more recent connection that you have drawn over like the past 6 months. So you have all of this history of your life that is that all intact.
Yeah.
And then we can kind of hit some catalyst-y stuff that is like maybe you're traveling with someone to this town because they believe the same thing.
Uh-huh.
So that's something we can talk to the player cast. And since you're the first person like laying out your character, we would then go to other players and be like, here's something that's already in existence. As a player, does anybody want to jump in on this and like draw a connection to this character? And now we can kind of build out from like this character who's got nothing to lose, who's coming to Maw Meadows to prove something based on a testimony from a discredited person.
Mm-hmm.
And this is your last chance.
I feel like when I work with the other players, maybe I'll be able to discover some kind of conflict between one of the characters where later, maybe if it does end up happening naturally, like, there's some kind of conflict resolution. Because I loved the moment with Ian and Tommy so much where they had that conflict and then they found out a detail. They were constantly butting heads, but then there were some details that they learned about each other later on where they realized like, oh, they really did care about me.
Maybe we do like a familial relationship then.
Yeah.
Because if you have nothing to lose and this is like professionally, you're kind of an outcast, you would probably fall back on the relationships on people you trust.
Yeah.
So perhaps we can go to the players and really lock in somebody as somebody you're like either in a relationship with as a family member or romantically or anything like that. Maybe your relationship is also kind of hinging on this going well as well.
Okay.
Whether that is just because there's danger or whether there's like some emotional weight there.
Or maybe they've rejected me because I'm crazy.
Yep, and this is your chance to prove it, like one more chance.
Yeah.
100%.
Ooh, I like that. Maybe it's not just about proving myself to an audience or the world as much as like to this person.
And there's nothing inherently funny about a relationship failing based on lack of trust.
Right.
But I bet you will find a way to make it kind of funny on stage because arguing is funny.
Yeah.
It tends to be funny.
Uh-huh.
And naturally, because that's not a comedic premise, we'll find our way to that genuine moment, like, without planning it.
Yeah, I kind of love the moments where it's not inherently funny, but then there's little things that happen that are funny because it's an unfunny kind of vibe.
Exactly.
Like, serious vibe.
And also, like, we don't know whose story this is. Maybe it's your story, maybe it's that person's story.
Because
if you die in 45 minutes of an hour of a two-hour show, it's not your story, it's their story. And they got dragged here by their crazy brother who's trying to prove a monster exists.
And that's cool too, because, I mean, is that kind of similar to how you have a conversation with people to create their characters?
And I think I don't really mention, like, I don't typically talk to like you're the protagonist of the story or you could be the protagonist because I want to let that unfold very naturally.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I bring it up. It's like we can't really plan for you to be the main character of that arc.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out on stage if you're the main character of that arc, A, based on how you guys behave with each other when we're actually up there, and B, what the tower says.
Yeah.
That's a huge weight off of the responsibility of like the GM. Ultimately, the dice or the tower are going to be what really tell us what happened. And as a DM, dungeon mastering with D&D or any other game that uses dice, I'll roll something, and if I have to, I could like lie, right?
Yeah,
I don't like to. I typically never do that, but it's a tool that is like widely accepted. If you can fudge a dice roll, you typically fudge it in favor of the players, but you can. You can't fudge a tower falling over in front of thousands of witnesses.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, like, we will see. Such a big part of that is just like, let's throw this baseball and see who gets a hit.
And I think this will be cool too for anyone watching this to see how it does unfold because
how's it going to translate?
That's all the info that we really have. You know. So if I'm an idiot and knock over this tower within 10 minutes.
Amazing.
Maybe my story contributes, but it's not going to be me directly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And a very fun thing that I like to do because this is such an eldritch setting with so much psychic bullshit going on is if somebody does die too early, I like to bring them back as hallucinations or as creatures that have changed in some way.
Yeah, you do that in a recent episode where they would look into the water and there'd be like, or like there's like a Mufasa-like.
A Mufasa cloud.
Cloud.
Like their face appears in the fog and they get to say something before they disappear. Yeah.
And that's so much fun. So you get to kind of invent in the moment reasons to bring back characters who might have died.
Right. I can pimp somebody out for a silly line.
Yeah.
And like if the line's not funny, the fact that they are like a cloud face is funny. You know, there's...
Yeah, yeah. And then the
no
comedy
pressure.
Comes from that as well.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, and this is kind of a crazy esoteric. I kept wanting to say existential and esoteric. I mean, it's both.
Exoteric.
This is kind of a crazy exoteric question. Do you feel like, you know, being able to improvise and go with the flow and change these stories has trickled into your everyday life where you feel like something goes wrong? There's an accident on the freeway and you're going to be late. There's a, you know, whatever happens, do you feel like you're able to go with the flow more and be like, well, maybe that's going to write my new narrative?
Not even a little bit.
I have
terrible at that in my day-to-day really? Life. I don't know. I wish I could be like, yeah, man, I learned a lot of lessons from myself.
I feel like if I were to like hear the way that you are.
Not good road rage. I have to yell a little bit. I don't act on the road, but I have to like, God damn it, in my car a little bit before I can let something go.
Watching you
I'm so frustrated.
Watching
so
you do this
easily.
Stuff on stage, I'm like, oh, this guy, when something goes wrong, he's like, oh well, it's part of my story.
I get so upset.
Let's go with the flow.
No,
now.
I don't. You know what I do do? I'll say like, I'll go to somebody that's like, are you having a hard time? And I'm like, no, it's all good. And then I'll get in private and I'll be like, what's the doodle bob? I'm a doodle bob in on my own. Like, I'm just, you know, yelling gibberish. I'm so upset. And then as soon as I get in front of somebody who, like, especially if it's somebody who's also dealing with the same problem, like, we're working on it together, that's when I'll trigger in the, yeah, it's all good. We'll figure it out. But I'm lying.
Oh. So you're like, good at suppressing your emotions.
I'm really good at burying it deep. Irish Catholic.
Great.
Raised Irish Catholic.
Uh-huh.
And I think I never want anybody to know that I'm upset unless I'm very close with them. So I'm often burying any feelings of frustration. So when I get alone, I gotta like get it out and be upset.
So you are a real human under there.
I am.
You are not George Primavera Bot.
No, I can't possibly separate. I mean, that's why I love DMing, because it's a break.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a 2-3-hour, 4-hour break from like having to worry about anything. All I got to do is keep track of the turn order and like how much hit points my monster has, or like where we're going.
Do you feel like that environment it's just set up so you can go with the flow and there is no wrong answer?
Yeah. Yes. And maybe I'm making that space for myself because I feel like there's so many obstacles in real life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I feel like as you're creating that space, it seems like you're creating the space for the characters and the actors in the scene, but you maybe are doing that for yourself just as much.
I'm doing it for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's if I can create, like, I think that there's, not to be like, I do it for every all of you, but like there is something that if you can give someone a gift of hooking them on TTRPG and giving them an outlet, even if it's not playing with me, just playing the game or games in general, I feel a little warm feeling about like, oh, they played D&D after playing in college with me for the first time. That's so great. I love that they found something they love and I'm maybe in part responsible for introducing it to them. That feels great. Yeah. You know? Same thing as recommending a movie that becomes your friend's favorite movie. And yeah, I think that playing games is such an easy way to get people. I mean, not to go off on a tangent, but during the pandemic, when we were all trapped inside for, you know, a year and a half, we played a 6-month-long game with 45 players and eventually 7 DMs in what's called like a West Marches campaign, basically, which is rotating, mixing, matching players, all things happening kind of on one continuous storyline, all culminates in like various event-like moments. And having that connection with people and starting that is something that I was so grateful to have personally, but also I felt like it was the one thing I could do for the people that I loved.
Yeah.
I can't make stuff with my hands. I'm not an artist. I suck with power tools. I live far away from a lot of people that I would like to be closer to, and it was like the one thing I could do. So maybe there is something that feels like this is like something I'm really trying to cultivate as like something that I can put out there that's positive.
Yeah.
But there's undeniably something in it for me too, because I have so much fun playing it.
But I think you need to have something that you get out of it too, because I think that the audience feels that through you. You know, you are a vessel for them.
I'm having fun.
You are an avatar for them to feel that fun flowing through you, and then that also
same with the players. They are also an avatar for
It's almost like I'm in safe hands. Like, I don't need to worry. George got it figured out. If I do something
that's for me to hear, I love that
throws something off, and I don't know. I mean, I'll find out in 2 days.
LoveDeathMosh.com.
Yeah, I will know better then. And I'm really excited to maybe give some kind of recap at some point in the future.
What your experience
was. Yeah, what my experience was versus the way I thought it would be and all the anxiety that I had beforehand. I'd like to be able to just get into like what that difference was and if my anxieties were justified, or if, I'd like to do some kind of debriefing on what that
and
was like
what
at some
TTRPGs
point.
Are next for you because you're absolutely
yeah because now I'm completely
and
obsessed
back.
And it's all I do with my life.
That's gonna happen.
Yeah.
You're gonna get bit by the bug up there. It's hard not to. Like I say that confidently as if it's like a sure thing. Not always a positive thing, but like with the Smosh cast, like you guys are actually friends and like
yeah.
do know each other and love each other in a way that I think a lot of actual plays like don't get that easy jumpstart of like we all know each other beforehand and know what's going to make each other laugh. I think you guys, every show, the Smosh cast is making each other laugh off the rip.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't stop thinking about Arasha and Chance together
yeah,
in
yeah.
that. I mean, they're like doing a Mr. Bean routine over in the corner. It was so brilliant. Like,
yeah, so good.
You guys have such a good foundation on playing with each other, and I think sometimes that's the obstacle is like rediscovering play as an adult,
mm-hmm.
where you are playing with other adults. You're not just like playing like a Call of Duty or a shooter or whatever, where or a single player game
mm-hmm.
where you're just investing. You're actually like opening yourself, your earnest investment.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook, you know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
With other people is vulnerable.
Yeah. And I think that as, you know, we grow into adulthood, we're often told like to leave the whimsical behind,
mm-hmm.
you know, to stop being playful. Life is a little bit more serious. You're supposed to doom scroll now, okay? That's your job. Your job is to hate the world, hate yourself, be afraid of everything.
Oh, especially in this time of like AI being like an artist now, which is crazy to me. And like all these, you know, movies and television shows, if they start using AI, we're removing like a human element that is so necessary in art to reflect and to grow.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can create an experience that I would argue is more powerful with just like three or four friends and some dice. And in a time where isolation is like the model, mm-hmm. community and holding your anchors of community are things that will save your life. Like it'll really save your life.
So we talked a lot about you being the dungeon master, the game master. Do you get a chance to play a lot as a character yourself?
Rarely. I'm what's called a forever DM.
I can't even imagine you playing a character because you DM so well, but you're playing characters as your...
I'll drop into like an NPC or a non-player character often. And I especially when I'm playing like a longer form game, I'll have like eight of those on reserve that I'm jumping in between. But when I play, it's rarely, but I do tend to play like... I know I mentioned like getting raised Irish Catholic, Roman Catholic. I often play like paladins, which are like holy warriors.
Yeah.
I don't really associate with like any organized religion anymore, but like that's because of how I have like some personal major qualms about how the church operates, which if you don't have any, use the internet. And there are some pretty obvious things that are horrible. Go watch Spotlight. That's a good movie to figure out what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something in me when I go to role play a character that has like a religious association where sometimes I am role playing that religious character and that order in a way that I wish the church operated. Wouldn't it be cool if I was part of a church that didn't stink? You know what I mean? Or like didn't do horrible crimes? And like, what if I actually, all those lessons that I learned as a kid and all of those like beautiful lessons about altruism, generosity, and kindness and unconditional love actually applied to the way these people practiced? And that way I'm a hero performing good with no like inherent sense of like, oh, well, I'm gonna be rewarded on this earthly plane. I'm doing this because the cardinal told me to, and I'm not supposed to ask questions, et cetera. And you know, getting to, it's like a wish. It's a fantasy. It's like I get to like imagine what that would have been like. It heals something broken in me that like lost a major. I used to be very religious.
Yeah.
Like there's definitely a wound in here somewhere that I'm easing with that kind of role play. And, you know, I think there's a very funny thing where in many D&D campaigns, the church, the government, power structures are typically the antagonists. And they are typically the things that people take down, especially like we're living in a very oligarchical capitalist society here. Lots of D&D stuff that I've been a part of in America has to do with those systems, like, corrupting, and you play a hero to resist it.
So in that sense, there is, you know, the opportunity for people to live out the fantasy of, what if...
There's a catharsis to what if we could make a difference by just taking simple action? Or what if we could represent something we wished was different in a better way that doesn't justify the bad things, but reimagines what something could be in a more positive way?
I think in a weird way, we all find some kind of catharsis in having these imaginary worlds where there is no wrong.
Yeah.
Because in our day-to-day lives, it feels like every decision has a consequence. Every decision, there's so much weight to it.
That's the lesson that D&D, I think, learns from video games, where it's like, give us a sandbox where we can test things. It's like when kids are mean to each other, when they hit each other, it's because they don't have empathy yet.
Yeah.
And they're like hitting to be like, oh, it doesn't feel good.
And the person cries, and they're like, ooh, I don't like how that
I don't like that.
Yeah.
And you can do that in like a less consequential way in D&D, where you can just like experiment with actions and then be like, ooh, I liked how that felt. I'm gonna lean into more of that for this character. Or like, ooh, this character did a bad thing. I did not like how that felt. Either A, I wanna take that character in a different direction from now on, or B, I wanna resolve that bad feeling with this character in character. Yeah, catharsis up the wazoo with D&D if it's played with people you trust.
How many hours do people say that you need to do something in order to have mastered that skill?
Oh, it's like your 10,000 hours.
Are you anywhere near 10,000? Because even Dread, it's like 2 or 3 hours per episode.
Yeah.
And there's like, including the live shows, there's gonna be 7 or 8 of those, including the pilot. Are you at 10,000?
If I'm not there, I'm real close.
That's crazy.
I've definitely played over 1,000 games of D&D.
That's crazy.
And if you count Dread, it's certainly over 1,000. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's born from a lot of, like, the pandemic was tons of games. College, tons of games in college. Private games, running private games on the weekly will rack up that number very fast.
Are you still doing private games?
I'm not anymore.
Okay.
I had to stop.
Yeah.
Just because it became too many campaigns to keep track of.
I can only imagine.
Going simultaneously, it was quite crazy. But I have eras of my life that I define based on the campaign that I was playing at the time, which is dumb. Oh, that was City of Mirrors. That period, that was Clustermuck. That's fun. That was like that 4-month period where we were coming out of the pandemic. I literally have like all of these genres. I really love playing with genre. So jumping genre is also a really fun way for me to reflect what media I'm enjoying at the time. And you also experience a very weird phenomenon of like this like groupthink of humanity. Like the second we're doing like a pulpy adventure campaign, 9 movies with the exact same premise are coming out. Like it's very weird how it happens. We were playing like a noir and we finished the noir campaign, go into post-production on like the actual play production of it. And then 3 noir projects drop.
Isn't that crazy? I feel
just
like that happens all the time.
Happens
like,
all the time.
With media, there's like all of a sudden 12.
The strings attached phenomenon with the Timberlake Portman movie and the Ashton Kutcher Mila Kunis movie.
Yeah, there's two movies that came out at the same time.
Yeah, they're named just slightly different, but they are the exact same plot.
Yeah, no, that happens all the time.
Happens crazy. All the time. You experience that a lot which is crazy because that makes the eras of the D&D campaigns pertain exactly to the media I was also watching at the time.
Yeah, there's
it's a fun thing to look back on my life during a period and be like, that's my sci-fi era right there, or that was my space opera time, Rift Rats.
Yep.
That's that one, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Also, like, based on the comedy or drama of it, I can tell what kind of place I was in.
there's some dark shit in there.
I got a little darker on that one.
Yeah,
definitely. There's a campaign we ran for Hero Club called Adversary that is very, like, biblical horror. And it is, when I listened back to that, I was like, I could have eased up a little on these
guys. You were unpacking
some stuff. I was unpacking some stuff. Yeah, we're getting really into some, because say what you want about the Bible, there's some crazy-ass lore in that thing. And it's fun to make a D&D monster based on.
Revelations is fun.
Yeah, there's, you know, biblically accurate angels as, like, a D&D encounter. It's kind of cool. Kind of sick.
That's cool.
Pretty cool. Banishment spells. Like, also, D&D has such, like, a Celestials Fiends thing going on that it's, like, really applicable to all the spells kind of work and feel very much in line with that. It's like, I'm Taylor Swift. I just, like, I have my Eras tour. And I just look back. I'm like, yep. I'll do a concert one day. I'll do 10 games in a row.
And they're already 2 hours long. So that'll be great. That'll be a good 20-hour. You'll do a 24-hour live
marathon?
Stream?
Oh, I would do it.
24 hours of...
I would do a 48-hour D&D marathon if I had appropriate amounts of coffee and players.
If this video gets 500,000 likes...
500,000 is too low.
Too low? You want more?
It's so crazy.
750,000?
Sick. That's a number I probably won't get held to.
Okay.
Keep going up. Oh, likes, not views.
Dude, 500,000 likes is already, like, impossible.
That's not happening. You're right.
I conflated. Views. Okay.
No, likes. Let's keep it likes. Keep it likes? Half a million likes.
Okay, then you'll do a 48-hour live stream?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
I'll hold you to that.
You gonna make me do it?
I will make you do that.
I'll do it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, George.
Thank you for having
Appreciate
me.
You,
Such
man.
A pleasure, buddy.
This is so fun. Yeah. And I guess check out live.smosh.com, get your tickets.
Yeah.
And I'll be in the next episode, and I'm totally not nervous.
Yeah, dude, you're gonna kill it. You're gonna crush it. Can't wait. Can't wait for Anthony. Live.smosh.com, check it out.
Follow George on all the socials.
@DMGeorge_Primavera. Bye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.